You're listening to Wake Up Tucson. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Is this, Matt, is it on? Is the microphone on?
It is on, Chris DeSimone.
Is the mic?
It is on.
Son of a nutcracker! Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to Wake Up Tucson. Good morning to Notorious ESQ.
Ready for a happy hour and some mead.
Yeah, it's going to be fun today.
Not going to be doing any LARPing, though. No LARPing, but just some mead.
I wonder if we could have some sort of dueling thing, right, with a couple of broadswords or something like that, right out in the mall.
As long as in the mall, it's spilled out into the common area of the mall. As long as it doesn't involve me, I think it's a great idea.
Well, you can say that now. Wait till we get a few dragon meads under your belt.
The mead starts talking, right?
Yeah. Hey, it's the mead talking. It's not me.
Mead's driving the bus, baby.
Dragon Holio, he starts calling himself as he runs through the mall. Frank the Tank. We're streaking.
Thou giveth me some paper. Maybe the mead's already talking. Who knows?
Everyone's just shutting off their radio right now.
that was the breeze that started blowing. Was the switches.
Welcome back to the Wake Up Tucson Show. Chris DeSimone, Matthew Neely. Happy hour tonight, as Matthew mentioned, 5:30 at Tucson Games and Gadgets and the Short Rest Tavern. It's very cute. One of our listeners said on Facebook when I posted up to remind people about it that she went Christmas shopping at Games and Gadgets at the Tucson Mall one and didn't know the tavern was there. Because it's almost like a speakeasy feel to it. It has a little sign. It's in the back right corner, and then you walk down a little hallway, and then the tavern's in the back.
And they're druids. It's filled with druids that were drawn to scale, like in Spinal Tap. So, you know, they're very tiny.
No one knew who they were or what they were doing. So there's your first bump.
I almost...
Spinal Tap Stonehenge is your first bump of the day.
I almost tripped into a 12-inch Stonehenge on the stage.
Stonehenge, where the demons dwell. Stonehenge was in fear of being trod upon by a dwarf.
That was it.
I know that's not the right... You say little... Little people? Is that what's the proper phrasing for people who are of that stature, Matt? What do you got?
I don't know.
All right, that's what I'm gonna
say. I'll be Googling that in a moment.
Well, no, I just want to make sure I get it right because I don't want D.A. Morales writing Patty another email. Oh, Chris, I really disrespected short people. Randy Newman. Anyway. You're still on the Wake Up Tucson Show.
If you're still listening, you're on the Wake Up Tucson Show.
We have sports intern at the bottom of the hour, Schweikert second hour, classic Thursday, and then our friend Carlos Ruiz from HT Metals and Tucson Business Owners. The Tucson Business Owners is having on the Monday the 24th their Make It Matter Monday. They have a expert from Focus HR to help you deal and understand with the city of Tucson's ill-fated Prop 206 $15 an hour thing. So be ready for that. All right, here's the rundown of what we're going to cover today. Dum, bum, bum. The Associated Press telling its reporters how to now cover the coronavirus and what stat to now ignore. Alex Berenson, more humiliation for Fauci and vaccine advocates. We'll get to that in a second. We might get to Fauci flipping out on a senator and calling a moron. I love watching that guy crack. It's so good. Also with Berenson, we're gonna cover all the things they said about vaccines and boosters. And how, remember, when they're wrong, the science is evolving. So we'll do that. We have How much did CNN's viewership plummet? They're like the CNN, the Washington Generals of broadcast media. Actually, that's an insult to the Washington Generals. They didn't have as many people committing sex crimes. Jeffrey Toobin for the three. What else do we got here? The Voter Freedom Act. We got empty shelves again. Well, we didn't have breadcrumbs in those days because of, you know, the war. I love how they finally trotted out Buttigieg visiting an L.A. port. Now we're visiting the port.
He's back from leave now.
Do you remember? That's true. Remember Psaki said that Biden saved Christmas? Ann Coulter does a nice job on the great Epstein cover-up. And we're going to hopefully run through that probably third hour of some of the things that are kind of been not emphasized out there. Vespa in Town Hall, liberal reporter, writes basically a screed, please shut the hell up about January 6th. Tucson, empty shelves, TUSD, U of A in there. Despite the pushback from the faculty union who wanted to go online. We'll talk about that whole thing. When we come back, Matt, we'll probably play that video from Val at KOLD, who she's a counterbalance to Bud's horrible reporting. Okay. Now, here's the perfect thing. So Bud does a story same day about the city of Tucson threatening to leave the RTA, right? And Kozachik and these people make various statements about how RTA has screwed them, right? Guess who Bud Foster doesn't talk to in the actual story? Anyone from the RTA or any other non-City of Tucson person.
Or maybe Steve Christie or somebody who might have a different viewpoint.
Correct, right? Not on there at all. So we'll go through that a little bit. I mean, when your sole sources of your quotes is Kozachik and the dude and no one else. I mean, come on. And then we're at 7% inflation now, supposedly. Now, remember, I want you to think about this because we're in the city of Tucson and we do this thing. We're all about the working poor, and Democrats say they're about the working poor, right? So I remember when there'd be very – I'm gonna quote Richard Elias, God rest his soul. Richard was always wary about – he would say he was wary about sales tax. Let's increase the sales tax. Because he would tell you, rightfully so, that it's a regressive tax on poor people. So, and that's like talking about we're going to bump a sales tax a half a percent or two, right? Or no, half a percent or one, right? But it would still have a disproportionate effect on people. Because remember, what's the median wage in the city of Tucson? You know, it's in the low 20s. Okay? So... Take what a guy like Richard Elias, who would say, man, that half a cent or 1 cent percent will really hurt working families, Latino families in Tucson, but now we make it 7%. That's what they don't get, right? That's what's so sad that the local media, when they have these various people on their TV shows, radio shows, or what, they don't ask them that question. Do you think it's better or worse for the working families of Tucson that they're paying an extra 7% for everything? And the other thing is, if they were asked that, they go, oh, we have these wonderful things where you can get grants and help from the America Cares Act, blah, blah, blah. What percentage of people actually care about that? Will actually be aware and go do that? What? 3%? But you get to say it. But in the end, they're just trying to figure out life. So remember, all you Democrats out there and any of you people that get these people on your shows, if you're not asking about a 7% crushing effect on the working families of Tucson, you're failing your damn job. 6:15 in the morning. When we come back, let's go to Val Cavazos, who actually does reporting, unlike Bud Foster. And it's talking about, she does a rundown about police times. Response times. And it's mildly scary as hell. So we'll start you off. Ronnie passed away. How old was she? Like 78 or something, I think.
I think so, 78, yeah.
All right.
Early record from the Ronettes, Silhouettes, from 1962.
I still want Stonehenge, remember.
We'll do it, absolutely.
Oh, thank you, Matt. You know what's so great about Spinal Tap is that my boys from Yes will tell you that some of that stuff they did, right? That whole scene about the them being trapped in the set of those little cocoons, that never happened to the Yes guys, but it's definitely a take on some of the weird, bizarre, over-the-top stage sets that they did during a concert.
Getting lost in the tunnels behind the stadium, ready to say, hello, Cleveland! We love you, Cleveland!
That part where they're at the Six Flags, and remember after Nigel quit? And they're like, I'm not going to do some 17-minute freeform jazz odyssey. You know, I think that's part of I think that's also a Yes criticism on one of their overblown albums. So it's pretty good. And the Yes guys take it in total awesome stride. So
absolutely.
When they went to go see it, they're like, oh, God, I think that's us. So
in all good comedy, there's a kernel of truth, as they say. So there you go.
And in Tucson politics and all good truth, there's a lot of comedy. All right, Matthew, let's get to Val Cavazos, who moved over from K-Gun 9 on your side and trying to balance out Bud's one-sided reporting over at KOLD. Let's go to the KOLD studios. Dan Murray is in the other lady.
New information tonight on how severe the staffing shortage is at the Tucson Police Department. Good evening. I'm Brooke Wagner.
Brooke. And I'm Dan Mars.
Brooke Wagner, that's right.
Average response times are now at an all-time low. Chief Investigative Reporter Valerie Cavazos questioned TPD's leadership to find out how this ongoing staffing crisis could impact you and what's now being done about it.
You could be deader.
The drop in response times is nothing new. I've been investigating this since 2018. But this is a dramatic drop from several years ago. For the first time, the average response time goal for level one calls, the most urgent, dropped below 50%, and not just for those true emergencies.
122 officers, that's what the Tucson Police Department is short, and 105 of them in patrol. The workload, the overtime, is continuously draining, and that's been leading to even more attrition.
The past 2 years have been very rough for policing as an institution.
Assistant Chief Kevin Hall is in charge of the patrol unit. He feels the intense strain on his crew. The department loses 8 to 9 officers a month.
Every time we lose a person, a sworn officer, regardless of their rank, eventually it's going to come from patrol.
And the depletion is largely why it could take longer for officers to show up to some true emergencies, the level one calls.
At least 2 hours.
For the first time, the average response time dropped to an all-time low, from 66% in 2016 to 48% last year. Hall's response.
I am not satisfied. I would like to see full academy classes for the next couple of years, just to get us up to a position where my staff isn't working so hard all the time.
Have you ever seen anything like this?
No.
But he explains the data is not all that it seems, especially when it comes to life-threatening situations. Response times could take only a few rather than more than 5 minutes.
If it's a serious injury collision, we go. If it's a shooting, we go. If it's stabbing, we go. If it's an assault, we go.
And there's been more true emergencies to go to since 2018. Priority one calls ramped up from nearly 1,900 to 2,500. That's about a 35% jump. That includes 87 murders in 2021, a record-setting year, and 87 deadly vehicle crashes. It usually takes 6 to 10 cops to work a scene, and they're there for hours.
And now you have a sergeant who's calling people who are at home, off duty, to try and get them to come in. Mm-hmm. That's where I believe you're going to see a lot of those delays in those calls is because they're tied up. They're on other major incidents, and the volume of calls coming in will always outweigh the number of officers there are to take those calls.
Hall explains another reason for not responding quickly. Officers are more mindful about going into some potentially dangerous situations after 911 calls are made. He says faster isn't always better, because faster could lead to critical mistakes.
Sometimes we need more information before we get there, and so the officers and the sergeants will slow down a little bit and wait for more information. One of the things that always comes to mind is the Tamir Rice case, where the officers didn't have all the information. They arrived very quickly, they acted very quickly, and it was a very tragic event.
As officers spend more time, hours, on true emergencies, Hall says that can take them away from responding to lower level calls when death is not imminent. Priority 2, 3, and 4 calls are also at an all-time low. Look at the Priority 2 data. The 10-minute goal reached 43% of the time last year, compared to 52% in 2016, a steady decline. Priority 3, 51% last year, a consistent drop from 71% in 2016. And Priority 4, 47% last year, compared to 64% again in 2016. Hall explains sometimes there is simply not enough cops to go around to take care of everything that goes on in the city.
Are there times when that happens?
Absolutely, absolutely. That's what short staffing looks like.
To help ease the staffing crisis,
hey Matt,
the department is relying more on community service officers who take more of...
So it's interesting, when she shows the chart, the one that before, it's kind of in the background while she's talking, and it says taking 120 minutes plus on some of those calls, I think it said 41%. We're at 120 minutes plus. So that's the other part of it, right? It's not just the percentages. So when you look at, and I, there's only so much time Val has in a 5 minute. I mean, giving her 5 minutes to do this, I mean, that's like half the, that's half the broadcast, right? So, or it's a big chunk for
take weather and sports out. Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, it's a big chunk.
And of course the Keno Cat Show coverage, but, it's all K's. It's Keno Cat Show. It's the nicer KKK. What happened was, the when you look at that number, so she's focusing on when did they meet the goal of 10 minutes or whatever they say for each level staff. When you see that number of how many people are waiting, what's 100? So it's 120 plus minutes, 120 minutes plus, right? That could be 2 days or never, right? That was when TPD, when TPOA was fighting with the council about not cutting cops and all of that stuff, and they had to do FOIA requests, and they were talking about how many people for domestic violence calls were waiting 24 hours. That's the other side of the story. So Matt, we'll just hold on to this. We'll play it maybe a little later because I know we're coming up close. So in the end, right? And I know Assistant Chief Hall is trying to put lipstick on a pig here, which again, all of this is the city council's fault. All right. All of this is Rahina Romero, Paul Cunningham, Steve Kozacik, Nikki Lee, Lane Santa Cruz, Shirley Scott, Paul Durham. All these, it's all your fault. All of this misery is on you guys, right? It's also on, and again, Ortega. What's Ortega doing? Well, Ortega is a very well paid bean counter that knows that if he picks his head up, these people will get upset with him. So he's not going to, Ortega's not a leader. He just seems to be a nice guy who's a good bean counter. All right? If you're looking for Ortega to come out and go, man, this is really hurting us doing blah, 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 you're looking at the wrong guy. The other one, too, is when you look at the amount of calls, right, and they're talking about 1,800 to 2,500 kind of bump. So let's see, over a three-year period, that's, let's see, 1,800, 700. That is like a 60% bump in calls, right? So your town's becoming more chaotic, and you keep, this is why it's criminal what Rahina and Kozacik and Cunningham and these people have done, is when you look at the call volume that's going up and you guys, you know, started 12 years ago cutting cops, it's sick. Very, very sick. Oh, another thing about they need more information. Okay, yes and no. The start of it was right, but Chief Hall spun it a little bit. It's about you don't go there. They don't want to go, and they have no backup, right? Chief Hall's talking about they got to call up people who are with their kids in the backyard going, hey, I need you to come in, right? Well, if you're a cop who knew there was five cops coming within a minute to help you, that's a different situation than, oh, I'm going to go into a situation and there's no one coming to help me. That's the real story on those things, too. Yes, information, I'm with you. But in the end, they know they have no backup rolling in. We'll play the rest of this a little bit later. So there's a lot of meat on that bone, as we like to say. Larson, the sports intern, coming up next. Wake up, Tucson, 10:30 The Voice. Is this the basketball one? Are we playing basketball? 6:35 in the morning. You're on the Wake Up Tucson show, 10:30 The Voice, local news and talk, hanging out with America's best and freest sports intern, Ryan Larson. Ryan, good morning, sir.
Good morning, Chris. Of all the adjectives that describe me, I think freest is my new favorite one.
As a guy going to law school, it's the last time you'll ever hear it. Now, let's start with Georgia-Alabama on Monday night. The collective wisdom was Alabama beat them already. You know, great court. You know, Saban's got the quarterback. He knows these kind of games. What happened?
Georgia got the job done in the national championship game. They ended a 41-year national title drought, which seems pretty inconceivable based on how consistently Georgia's been at the top of the rankings in college football, and they exercised some of their Alabama demons that they've had going back to 2017 when they lost to the Crimson Tide in overtime in the national championship game as well. And the way that Georgia won this game is they basically took Alabama's playbook from about 5 years ago, and they used it against the Crimson Tide. When Nick Saban was originally building his dynasty, he did it on great defense and not very great quarterback play. And that's what Georgia did in this national championship game, is they had Stetson Bennett, who was a former walk-on for the Bulldogs, two-star quarterback. He played well in this game. They didn't ask him to do a ton. He only threw for 225 yards, had a couple of touchdowns in the process, and Georgia just tried to run the ball and control the clock as much as possible. And then on the defensive side of the ball, they were just dominant. Going into the SEC championship game, which was the first time Georgia and Alabama played this season, it was expected that Georgia would control both lines of scrimmages. Alabama had some questions especially on their offensive line, but Georgia was completely unable to exploit that in the SEC championship game, and that just didn't happen on Monday night. Georgia was dominant on their defensive line. They sacked Bryce Young four times in this game, but he was constantly under duress. And Bryce Young, he had to throw 57 times for Alabama. And he had two picks, and he only threw for 370 yards on those 57 attempts. And so Georgia really hurt Bryce Young in this game. Alabama's offense was never able to get rolling, especially in the red zone, where they were completely unable to convert for most of the game, kicking a ton of field goals instead of scoring touchdowns in the red zone. And then a pick six for Georgia with a minute left put the game away, and they win by 15, and they're the national champions this year.
Couldn't happen to a nicer group of Nick Saban, Greg Byrne people. That's what I'll say.
Yeah, it's good to keep them humble every now and then, because if you look at the recruiting rankings for next year, Alabama's currently sitting at number two, so I think they're going to be back ranked number one to start next season. So you might as well enjoy every Alabama loss while you can, because Bryce Young's coming back. A lot of talent on both sides of the ball are coming back for Alabama. They're going to be back probably in the playoff again next year, so just be prepared already.
So tell me about the wild card weekend for the NFL. It seems it's kind of a different kind of situation than in the past. What's different about this year?
Right, so we have the seven playoff teams again this year from both conferences. And so we get two games on Saturday, three games on Sunday, and then we actually have a Monday night playoff game for the first time in history. So we get three straight days of playoff football, which is pretty fun. You can basically wake up Saturday, watch football all day, and then wake up Sunday and watch football all day again. And so there's a lot of good games this weekend as well, because we only do the one bye for each conference now. That means that some of the better teams still have to play on wild card weekend, a lot higher stakes this weekend than normal in the NFL.
Yeah. Let's do a rundown of what's so the Cardinals are the Monday night game. Let's start off with our Arizona team, right?
Yep, the Cardinals are the Monday night game. They get to play the Rams, who the Cardinals are very familiar with at this point. The Rams are a 4-point favorite going into this game, and the question for the Cardinals is their offensive line going to be able to hold up against the Rams' really great defensive line? The Cardinals on Sunday, they had a chance to win the division and to steal the NFC West away from the Rams to be able to play this playoff game at home, but they just got crushed by the Seahawks. The game was only an 8-point game, but in reality, the Seahawks controlled the game pretty much the entire time. They ran all over the Cardinals. The Cardinals gave up 200 yards of rushing, and then Russell Wilson only threw for about 250 yards, but he was only sacked once. And that for the Cardinals on their side of the ball, they ran the ball completely ineffectively, only had 120 yards rushing. And so their offensive line has been struggling. Kyler Murray got sacked 5 times in that against the Seahawks. And the Rams, their defensive line is significantly better than the Seahawks. They have Aaron Donald. They have Von Miller now. A lot of big names on that defensive line. And so if the Cardinals' offense isn't able to get going against the Rams, it's going to be a problem. And while Matthew Stafford is tied for the NFL lead in interceptions this season, it's going to be a question of if the Cardinals' defensive backs are going to be able to put pressure on the receivers. They have a lot of talent, the Rams do, in the receiving core. They have Odell Beckham. They have Cooper Kupp, who led the league in receptions, touchdowns, and receiving yards.
I just love that name, Cooper Kupp.
Cooper Kupp, great name. And so the Rams have a lot of talent. The Cardinals beat them once this year, but in Los Angeles, but that was a different Cardinals team. It was a lot healthier. We'll see if the Cardinals can reclaim any of that form going into this playoff game.
Yeah, because one of my questions I had in my head is, what's the difference between October 1st Cardinals and January 1st Cardinals?
The first thing you say is DeAndre Hopkins was playing on October 1st, and the Cardinals' offense has looked completely different without DeAndre Hopkins specifically. He's always been Kyler Murray's go-to target, bailed him out of a lot of situations when he could just throw the ball up to Hopkins, or when he's scrambling around, Hopkins would be able to get open. The Cardinals just don't have that anymore. They don't have receivers who can do that. And against this Rams defense where they have Jalen Ramsey at corner who can shut down pretty much anyone in the league, it puts a lot more pressure on Murray to make plays, to create time with his feet. And we see that when he gets sacked a ton, when these other receivers are only going for 50 yards in a game. You just really miss DeAndre Hopkins for the Cardinals. And then they also don't have Chase Edmonds at running back, which is another factor on this offensive side. But DeAndre Hopkins is what you miss most as the Cardinals. There's a chance he could be back if the Cardinals make it deeper into the postseason, but as of right now, he's not expected to play.
Let's go through now. The other thing too about this, I think what I like about this NFL playoff situation is there seems, even though the Packers would think they got the bye and they're the number one seed in the NFC, there's really no super dominant team, obviously, in this playoffs. Is that an accurate statement?
That's definitely a fair statement, especially in the AFC. I would say the Packers in the NFC are the closest thing we have to a dominant team in the playoffs right now because they have Aaron Rodgers, and they're getting healthier going into the playoffs than a lot of teams are. Most teams are more injured, beat up going into the playoffs. The Packers are seeing some guys coming back, especially on the defensive side of the ball, which is absolutely huge for them. You have guys like Jaire Alexander at cornerback, and a few of their defensive linemen are going to be coming back. So the Packers are the closest thing we have to a really dominant team, the team that is probably the favorite going into the playoffs. But then on the AFC side of the ball, the number one seed is the Tennessee Titans. They don't even have Derrick Henry. Their quarterback is Ryan Tannehill. You definitely are not going to feel confident the Titans is the one seed as if they're some kind of juggernaut in the AFC. The closest juggernaut we have is the Chiefs, who are the two seed right now. They get to play the Steelers, which should be a pretty easy for win for them. And they do
my friend Elsa, turn away from the radio when he said the the Steelers are going to be the easy win.
Don't listen when I say that Ben Roethlisberger is the worst quarterback in this playoff.
So spicy. I love it. So let's go through the games real quick. Now, it's interesting. So we start off with what do we got here? We start off with I just had it in front of me. The
Raiders Bengals.
Raiders Bengals. Thank you for. Oh, I have it there. Raiders Bengals. It's a 2:30 game. Mm-hmm. This is. I don't know. Is this the one of the worst games in the AFC? other than the Steelers.
It's a very fun game because the Bengals are good, actually. They have Joe Burrow in his second year. He was the number one pick last year.
I like watching Joe Burrow.
Joe Burrow's a lot of fun to watch. He's very confident. He's willing to stand in the pocket and take big hits. This is going to be a fun offensive game. Neither defense is great,
okay,
but the Bengals are able to move the ball well. Jamar Chase is a great receiver. And then the Raiders, for some of their struggles this year, they can still be a fun team. There's going to be a lot of crazy plays, too. Two teams new to the playoffs. Expect a lot of chaos in this game, but I think the Bengals win it.
Now, the interesting one. So, Saturday night, we got an AFC matchup between the very surprising New England Patriots, who won the division, correct?
The Bills actually won.
Oh, Bills won the division.
Got them by a game.
That's true. So, now they're playing tomorrow. They're playing Saturday night in possibly the worst weather, cold-wise. They're talking 3 degrees at game start for this game on Saturday night. So that'll be fun to watch. Then we have
miserable
Eagles Buccaneers to start off Sunday. And I assume this is at Tampa, so this shouldn't be too crazy for Mr. Brady and the crew. I'm assuming they're got to be at least a 9-point favorite in this thing.
They're an 8.5-point favorite. That was a good pick. The Bucs defense is severely injured at this point, though, and Antonio Brown just quit on the team like 2 weeks ago, mid-game. But other than that, it shouldn't be a problem. It's still Tom Brady in the playoffs. I think the Bucs are fine in this game.
And then Niners-Cowboys mid-afternoon on Sunday. What do you think about this?
Probably the best game of the week.
So Niners are playing have played very well over the last so many weeks, and the Cowboys, I think, are better than most people thought they were going to be this year.
Yeah, the Cowboys' offense is really good. Dak Prescott, ever since he's coming back from injury, struggled at times, but in general, this has been the best offense in football this year. And then the 49ers are peaking late in the season. They beat the Rams in overtime this past week in order to even make it in the playoffs in the first place. And they still have Jimmy Garoppolo quarterback, which raises some questions of whether or not you trust him. But he's taken the 49ers to a Super Bowl before. So this is probably the marquee game of the week. Just two of the biggest teams in the NFL, two of the biggest fan bases. It should be a fun game in Dallas.
And then Steelers-Chiefs Sunday night. You're saying this is basically a walk for the Chiefs.
I cannot believe this is a Sunday night game. Chiefs-Steelers. They're making us watch the Steelers offense on Sunday night primetime. We'll see if the Chiefs try and just run up the score early and are able to rest Patrick Mahomes in the second half.
And then we get back to Cardinals Rams on Sunday night.
Yep, good Monday night game. This is another fun one. It is a rematch. Those aren't always the best in the wild card round, but it should at least be fairly competitive. The Rams, you would think they would open as maybe a touchdown favorite, only 4-point favorites against the Cardinals. And so Vegas clearly expects the Cardinals to stay competitive, and we'll see what Kyler Murray can do, if he can come up with some wizardry at the quarterback position for the Cardinals, see if they can advance and give themselves a shot at getting DeAndre Hopkins back and going deeper into the playoffs.
Where are we at with freedom defender Novak Djokovic, and what's going on with him, the Australian government? Because that's still up in the air, right?
Yeah, he's still in the country. He is in Australia right now. He has been practicing because they're now in a legal battle where he is claiming that he should be able to stay in the country, that there were some questions about the way he filled out his paperwork to come into the country originally. So now that's going to court. That's going to be a legal battle. But for now, his status is just up in the air, and he plans to play in the Australian Open unless something changes and he just somehow gets pulled out of the country. But for right now, we'll be waiting around to see if anything changes. But he's still not vaccinated. His visa was canceled when he arrived, but for now, he's allowed to stay in the country, and he's going to try his title defense. He's expected to play on today is Thursday, so he's expected to play today in his title defense.
So our friend of the show, Sean McCluskey, is a one of those psycho Bears fans. They cleared out the GM and the coach Who do you like as a coach? Who do you think? I know they're interviewing everyone and their mother. Who do you like as the Bears coach? Who do you think would be a good fit for this woeful yet traditional NFL team?
You would think they're going to want to go after an offensive coach to maximize Justin Fields, who they drafted in the first round this past NFL draft, because Fields is going to be the future of the franchise. The Bears, have they ever had a good quarterback? It feels like it's been since the 80s since they've had a really good quarterback. And so they obviously should go after an offensive coach. Some of the other big names, though, that keep coming up are like Todd Bowles, defensive coordinator for the Buccaneers, Brian Flores, who was just fired from the Dolphins despite ending the season with a winning record. Those are some other big names for the Bears. But I think the best choice for them is Packers offensive coordinator Nathaniel Hackett. He's going to be a big name in this coaching search. He's going to get a ton of interviews. He'll probably get a head coaching job. If the Bears can steal him from the Packers, I think that would be a huge get for them.
All right. Well, the Ryan Clarkson just did it again. One of the best and most zero charge free segments of sports ever. So, Ryan, thanks for all the work as always. I'm actually looking forward to watching a little NFL this weekend. So,
thanks, Chris. Should be a fun weekend, and can't wait till I can bill you $300 an hour someday.
Yeah, then you'll be off the show. So good talking to you, and have a good weekend, buddy.
You too, thanks.
Wake Up Tucson, 10:30 The Voice, local news and talk. Congressman Schweikert at the top of the hour. Wake up. I'm just kind of shuffling right now to Gordon Sumner here. Wake Up Tucson, 10:30 The Voice.
The operative word was free for Mr. Larson.
You know, actually, I came in to show you something. I forgot. I did to honor our Games and Gadgets geekery tonight for the happy hour. I got some good soundtrack tunes from a variety of movies and things like that to support the theme, as we like to say. So 5:30 tonight, we will be at Tucson Games and Gadgets in the Short Rest Tavern. It should be a fun, unique happy hour experience. Second floor of Tucson Mall. Yes, malls still exist. Right near the defunct Sears Roebuck .co dash. Let's get to one of our listeners, hashtag the curse, opposite of the blessing. He's walking through Fry's right now, and he's sending us the pictures of the empty shelves, as that's the new one right now, the Biden, where they replaced the E with the E in Biden with empty shelves. Talking about, you're going to love this, it's 73% lean ground beef. This is even the 90s stuff, right? This is 73%. Usually 11, now it's reduced at $7.11 for like a pound.
Now the 80-20 ground beef is putting on airs. You know, we're 73%.
So then he found a piece of marinated flank steak. It was $15.58 for this small chunk. He got it for $5. That means it's really about to go bad soon, but he thinks that's the score. Him and I were just talking about it yesterday, about the pain. Like, when you go, now you really got to pay attention to the supermarket. Woo! I mean, I walked out with 80-20 ground beef at Safeway on the value pack at $2.48. I was stealing it. It's, you know, we usually don't eat a lot of like Ruffles potato chips in my house, but there's sometimes at the holiday snacking period, you have various dips that you want a good ridge chip for it kind of thing. I usually would do a kettle chip if I bought a potato chip, but anyway, so my wife's like, she has on the list, you know, get some Ruffles. Okay. And I'm looking at this, it's like a 7-ounce bag of Ruffles for like, you know, it's like $4 or something like that. You're like, say what? Then if you want to go big and get the party size, you know, that's 11 ounces or whatever it is now.
It's the hidden inflation where they put everything in the smaller packages, the 12-ounce pound of bacon and the 4-pound bag of 5 pounds of sugar. And yeah, it's just amazing. Amazing.
Well, across the board. So, you know, when you'd get like a bag of ice, you know, you want an extra bag of ice, right? So it was always 10 or 20 pounds, right? And the 10 pounder was usually somewhere between a buck 19, buck 75, buck 99. Sorry. So all of a sudden, the 10 pound bag of ice for $1.99 at Fry's is now 7 pounds.
hidden inflation, baby. And they think people are so stupid they won't notice it. Oh, it's the same price. Yeah, people notice.
Hmm. What percentage of people notice? I'm asking you that question right now. What percentage of people think do you think actually notice the hidden inflation?
That's a good question.
Right.
I would say a lot of people do, but you're right. Everybody doesn't. And that's why they do it, right?
Is it 50% or less? I think it's less.
Maybe it's less. Sadly, you're probably right.
So that's why this is why we're a good mix. You're the optimist and I'm a mild pessimist on certain things. This is what's beautiful about this relationship.
Some of us notice.
Thank you. I want you to restate your statement, Mr. Neely. National Peach Melba Day. Make your dream come true day. Love that. National Korean American Day. National Rubber Ducky Day. I don't know what National Public Broadcasting Day. Does that mean the NPR hacks or overall radio in the public?
I'm taking owner. I'm taking, you know, claiming it for us too.
All right.
Okay.
Love it. That's our Wake Up Tucson Esquire.
Yeah.
And I want to bring up Stephen Foster Memorial Day, but I figure that's got to be something racist in there, right? I feel like there's some racism in a Stephen Foster song now that. Oh, damn it. Well, we tried. Can we talk about Huckleberry Finn? No. Uncle Ben's rice? Aunt Jemima waffles? Oh! Damn it! We'll try again. David Schweikert coming up next. Wake up.